you had a great week. I'm laughing at myself right now because my husband sent a definition of the word mominator to me. And that's because that's the snow cone flavor I like to order. And apparently, mominator is actually in the Urban Dictionary. And here's the definition. A normal mother that will turn into a butt-whooping machine anytime you threaten her child. By the way, I feel bad saying that word B-U-T-T because it's a bad word in my household now. But wait a minute, no pun intended there. But anyways, anyone need a butt-whooping machine when it comes to the news on the special counsel investigation? Because I do. I don't know about you guys, but I feel exhausted anytime someone covers the story of what's going on with the Mueller special counsel investigation. We try to do our best in Smarter News to provide you something different that will help empower you to make you feel a little bit better about that particular story, because we all feel sort of drained by this ongoing investigation. That doesn't mean that it's not worthwhile. It doesn't mean that it might eventually produce something that's of great public interest. But I think it's really easy to feel drained by it. And so I just wanted to take a quick few minutes here to tell you two things that I think you should keep in mind over the next several weeks as we continue to get headlines from this investigation. Here's what I want you just to remember. Just remember this one point. It's easy to forget that these people work for us, but they do. All of them work for us, whether it's President Trump or Bob Mueller or Jeff Sessions. We hired them by proxy and they work for us. And that's why our taxpayer dollars do go to the special counsel. You'll see on SmarterNews.com, there's a figure that we use, an estimate for how much the special counsel has cost thus far. It's from PolitiFact. It's a great website. And they really lay out how they came to that number. And I felt pretty confident with how they got to that estimate based on the last information available from the special counsel, because they do make reports on it. It's around $17 million as of about a month ago. But the truth is, we really don't know exactly how much it costs. But you should know we are paying for it. And again, they work for us. So just remember, we've been promised an investigation that was supposed to look into whether or not America's democracy is secured. I mean, take out all the major players. That's the big point of the special counsel investigation. Can we trust our democracy and our elections? And some of you asked on social media and otherwise about the purpose of this investigation and whether or not some of these charges, whether it's on Paul Manafort or Michael Cohen, whether or not they had anything to do with this special counsel investigation and its purpose. And so what we did is we went back, and this is what I wanted to share with you, to the one page that the Justice Department put out back in May of 2017 that talked about the purpose of the special counsel. And I just want to read that to you. So the special counsel is authorized to conduct the investigation that includes this. And here's the quote: any links and or coordination between the Russian government and individuals associated with the campaign of President Donald Trump, and any matters that arose or may arise directly from the investigation, and any other matters within the scope. If the special counsel believes it is necessary and appropriate, the special counsel is authorized to prosecute federal crimes arising from the investigation of these matters, period. These are why these other issues have been caught up in this sort of dragnet, and whether or not they can be or cannot be. This is what you should know. They can be. Anything that the special counsel stumbles upon, anything, it has nothing to do with Russia or the president. If they stumble upon something they think is worthwhile, they can investigate it and they can bring charges. And that's the way the special counsel was originally set up. So I just want you to know that, because there's a lot of debate about all of this and it's interesting, but you should just be equipped with those two pieces of information. You're the boss. And we're promised something. We're going to see if it's going to be delivered. And it's costing us money. And some previous investigations, according to PolitiFact, at the end were in the $40 to $50 million range when we look at big government investigations. So just keep that in mind. In the meantime, I just wanted to take this opportunity to talk about something I've heard nothing about that I think is a really huge story and has nothing to do with Russia and a lot to do with immigration and a conversation I had recently about what's happening in Central America. Of course, immigration was in the news this week because of the arrest of an illegal immigrant in the case of the kidnapped and murdered college student Molly Tibbetts. I'm going to take this conversation in an entirely different direction, but I'm going to use that for just a moment because when we talk about illegal immigration and illegal border crossings, we're talking mainly about people from Mexico and Guatemala and Honduras and El Salvador. You know, we're not talking about Panama, but we often don't get too specific in our conversation. So when we talk about illegal immigration, we don't really get into the specifics as to why people are coming to America. We know it might have something to do with jobs and something to do with violence and something to do with gangs and something to do with drugs, but we don't really get more specific than that. We also seem to know that there's some danger in some of these countries that families are trying to leave. But I want to point something out to you. Despite the danger in some of these Central American countries and in Mexico, we, the U.S. government, still has a presence there, a presence through an embassy. You know, we have one in Honduras, we have one in El Salvador, we have one in Guatemala and in Mexico, and they're open. That's not the case in Nicaragua. On July 6, 2018, the U.S. government ordered the departure of non-emergency U.S. government personnel. That's what the State Department posted. And let's be clear, when you order the departure of non-emergency U.S. government personnel, you're ordering an evacuation. So that's what happened in July. Now, the embassy quietly opened again in early August just for a few hours for emergency services. Why close in July? Why take everybody out? We had a team of people, the State Department did in Nicaragua, and they're gone. So why? And so I'm reading this directly from the U.S. State Department website and in a special travel warning for Americans who want to go to Nicaragua. This gives us some insight. Quote, heavily armed government-controlled parapolice forces in civilian clothing, sometimes numbering in the hundreds, operate in large parts of the country, including Managua. They are often in vehicles that don't have license plates, and they may be escorted by uniformed police forces. These groups are attacking blockades, kidnapping and detaining individuals, taking over privately owned land, and committing other crimes. The embassy alert goes on to say that if you are an American in Nicaragua, local police may not help you, the hospitals may not treat you, and if you're in trouble, the U.S. will not come and get you. So what's going on in Nicaragua? And why does it even matter? Let's start there. It matters because of the domino effect, up and down the line geographically. And we're part of that. America is part of that. Instability is not good for Central America. It's not good for the neighboring countries. And we're already seeing that in Costa Rica. The UN Refugee Agency is reporting that Costa Rican authorities are overwhelmed by thousands seeking asylum, and that Panama, Mexico, and even the U.S. are seeing rising numbers, though still in the low hundreds right now. Again, that's according to the UN. So we're part of this equation simply by geography. But there's also a bigger picture here as well. President Daniel Ortega rules Nicaragua. He has for years, on and off, for the last several decades. And our guest says Nicaragua experienced a hiccup of democracy, but for the most part, we're really talking about a dictatorship in this country. Some of his allies in the past have included Fidel Castro in Cuba and Hugo Chavez in Venezuela. In fact, some have suggested that Nicaragua is in fact the next Venezuela. And that connection is really important between Nicaragua and Venezuela, because I'm sure you've seen that Venezuela is under great economic pressure. It's hard to get basic goods in Venezuela. And that's why we're seeing stories like the one we covered on Smarter News of pirates off the coast of Honduras and Nicaragua and Venezuela. And that story is super interesting just to think about pirates, because it's not something that you think about on a regular basis. But what's the big takeaway from that story? People are taking to the sea to rob other people for boats and fish and money because why? They're desperate. It's a bad sign. And in Nicaragua, very generically, again, there's all sorts of different internal issues, but very generically, what you should know is that the economy is bad. The government has tried to make changes to shore it up. There's a lot of corruption. The public does not like this. Some of the public, and there's protests, and the government has used violence to kill, arrest, and torture those who speak out. Quite frankly, I'm not comfortable with a lot of the numbers that are floating around about how many people killed. It's just they're very unreliable. It's in the hundreds, according to estimates. And the U.S. State Department, in fact, has recently issued sanctions against Nicaraguan officials and law enforcement officials for human rights abuses. So the U.S. State Department is obviously aware that this is actually happening. So at Smarter News, I was lucky enough to speak to someone inside Nicaragua. And we cannot reveal his identity. I had to edit our interview to protect him. But he insisted on speaking out because he wants you to know what's happening inside a country that he loves. And I felt compelled that we should all know more about what's happening in Nicaragua, because a story like this, unlike many others, will actually make us smarter as to what's actually happening south of our border and what is the dynamic within Central America. I began by asking our guest, would he describe Nicaragua as a stable country?
Not at all. What we have right now, it's a Pax Romana, which is the peace the way they see it. It's not a normal peace, but it's an artificial one, one that is sustained on violence. First of all, Ortega, he's very allergic to criticism. He doesn't like people calling him names, and eventually somebody will come and get you on something that you said lately on Facebook. I'm extremely surprised why I still have not received a death threat. They can easily throw me to jail from an indefinitely period of time.
Now, that's particularly scary because we talked a lot about family. And by publicly talking about President Ortega, our guest puts himself at risk for potentially being separated from them. From our conversation, though, I learned that just like America, there are deep divisions within families in Nicaragua about politics. And even though our source is a critic, his extended family is not. And he compared this to families in America where you have supporters for Bernie Sanders and supporters for Donald Trump in the same family and sharing the same table. The idea of being connected came up a lot in our conversation. Nicaragua is connected to other countries in Central America, and we're connected to Nicaragua as well because America over the years, for better or for worse, has become involved in political affairs in Nicaragua. That's a completely different conversation, but we should just remember we're connected, and Nicaragua is at a real inflection point.
My greatest fear for my country is to become a failed state. In 2021, we will celebrate 200 years of independence, where Mexico and Central America, the tiny states that were back in 1821, decided to become independent first from Spain and then from Mexico. 200 years after that, I see Guatemala, Honduras, El Salvador, deep in violence. I'm afraid that this vacuum, that the vacuum that Ortega will leave, it's going to consume us. That's what I'm afraid. I think that over and over, history has told us Nicaraguans that dictatorships do not work.
Our source says fear of what could come is one of the reasons why many are loyal to President Ortega. You know, Nicaragua is one of the poorest nations in the Western Hemisphere, the poorest in Central America. And this is one of the reasons why church missions, for example, from the United States have really meant so much to the country. And now some of that work is completely impossible to do. So what is it like living inside Nicaragua?
Our economy is in free fall right now. Tourism is, there are no tourists in Nicaragua. The government is trying really hard to sell the idea that everything is normal, but there's no way in God's green earth that tourists are going to come back when their governments are telling them, are advising them not to come. So that's one thing. There are, I think, around 80% of hotels are closed. So unemployment is on the rise. The Ortega's government has released bonds. He has called them bonds for stabilization or stabilizing bonds. Nobody will buy bonds with that name on it. So we're just, our internal debt is going up. So it's there are things to buy. The problem is that the power of acquisition, the buying power that people have, is in free fall. So in while we have the parasitical opposition, we have all the politicians who are making over $3,000 per month. That's Congress magistrates that serve only President Ortega or Vice President Murillo's orders, and they're making over $3,000 per month. They have all the fuel they can use. So it's really gross to see that.
Now, the U.S. has sanctioned political leaders and officials in Nicaragua, including President Ortega. Our source says he wants to see more of this from Europe as well, that without Europe, Ortega and his family continue to operate really freely, and they don't feel the squeeze from these sanctions. So with that said, I ask, what's the best case scenario for Nicaragua, and why risk speaking out?
I'm afraid that we will be yesterday's news. That's why I'm risking my life, because I don't want a civil war. But I still believe that the Lord is in control, and I believe in a peaceful resolution to all of this. This is not PR. I honestly ask for your prayers and your honest concern that they know that we are peaceful people, that we're not terrorists, that those who oppose President Ortega, we're not terrorists.
We had this conversation during the week when the former CIA director, John Brennan, had his security clearance revoked by President Trump. And while that news was swirling around the United States, there was all sorts of debate about whether or not it was an assault on freedom of speech. And I said to our guest that it was an interesting juxtaposition for me as a journalist to hear that debate, but also to listen to him and to understand what it's like to not be able to speak freely. And what he said to me was so profound. I just want you to listen to it and think about it, because it's so true.
We don't really know what liberty is, what freedom is, until it's taken away from us.
Thank you so much to our guest for having the courage to join us on Smarter News. We are grateful for his insight, and we're going to continue to watch this very important story in Central America. In the meantime, if you have any other story ideas that you'd like to share with us, email us, info@smarternews.com, and have a great week wherever you are. I'm Jenna. It's great to have you. Thank you so much for your support of Smarter News.
Finding great candidates to hire can be like, well, trying to find a needle in a haystack. Sure, you can post your job to some job board, but then all you can do is hope the right person comes along, which is why you should try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/zip. ZipRecruiter doesn't depend on candidates finding you. It finds them for you. Its powerful technology identifies people with the right experience and actively invites them to apply to your job. You get qualified candidates fast. So while other companies might deliver a lot of hay, ZipRecruiter finds you what you're looking for. The needle in the haystack.
See why 4 out of 5 employers who post a job on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free. That's right, free, at ZipRecruiter.com/zip. That's ZipRecruiter.com/zip. ZipRecruiter.com/zip.